ohiobc.edu.
As gas prices rise, focus is shifting toward the administration's ambitious clean energy goals. Join AFSEA Bethesda and AFSEA Energy May 4th at the Bethesda North Marriott for the second Energy and the Environment IT Day, featuring EPA, DOE, GSA, NRC, the DOD, NOAA, and Interior. View the impressive speaker lineup and register at AFSEABethesda.com/EEITday. Special thanks to premier sponsors Booz Allen, CGI Federal, DLT Solutions, General Dynamics, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, and platinum sponsors HP and Centurion Research Solutions.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose, weekday afternoons 3 to 7.
Christy Romero is the acting special inspector general for TARP.
We ended up questioning two-thirds of Venable's bill, which was over $676,000. And we concluded that OFS practices create an unacceptable risk that Treasury and really the American taxpayer is overpaying for legal services.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning, Tammy Flanagan and I, Tammy, Senior Benefit Director, NITP, weekly GovExec columnist, and seminar presenter extraordinaire. Good morning, Tammy.
Good morning, Bob.
And I'm Bob Lines. I'm with the same firm, NITP. I'm a tax finance type, and we have two distinguished guests. Not that the other guests aren't distinguished, but Greg Long, Executive Director. I have to do this slow. Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board.
Good morning.
Did I do that right?
You did.
Oh, boy.
Otherwise known as TSP.
Thank you. And Tom Trabuco?
Trabuco.
Okay. Director, External Affairs, Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Bob.
It's been about, what, 6 months, 8 months?
That's right. That's been a while.
And we'd look forward to this. Why don't we do the discussion of the Roth TSP, recognizing that it's the proverbial ship we can't even find on the, we can't, you all can, on the spyglass. We're talking second quarter 2012, not fiscal, calendar quarter.
That's correct.
So it could be as late as June 30th, but we'll know more later. But let's just talk in generalities because the people, you know, how does this thing work? And I understand that they're coming on. So let's...
I've even had people say, should I wait until it comes to contribute to the thrift? I'm like, no, don't do that because you can't make up for last time.
Thanks, Tammy.
Okay, now, what's the basic difference between a Roth TSP and could I call it a traditional TSP? What do you all call it?
That makes sense.
Okay, traditional TSP, kind of like a Roth IRA and a traditional IRA. And I think I know the answer, but you confirm it. If somebody puts money into a Roth TSP, when it does become available, second quarter, probably 2012, then there would be no tax benefit for the money going in, but a huge tax benefit when it comes out. Is that the way it works?
Yeah, that's correct. In general, the difference between the Roth TSP and the traditional TSP is that the Roth TSP balance is funded with after-tax dollars, well, a traditional TSP balance is funded with pre-tax dollars.
Okay, so somebody would save tax dollars, but the accountant side of me says all that glitters with tax is not necessarily the proverbial gold. Mm-hmm. So if you do put the money into the Roth TSP, the real benefit is later on in life and maybe future generations. It may be even a generational thing more than it is for anybody listening or in this room.
Well, that's correct. And, you know, one of the ways to think about this is... is a bird in the hand worth two in the bush? And, you know, do you want your benefit, your tax benefit now, which is the traditional pre-tax design that we have today, or would you like to get the tax benefit 20, 30, 40 years from now? And that's what the Roth allows. And you need to make some decisions about what you want and your expectation of future tax brackets that you would be in, and that will be available in the market, you know, what the government will be taxing people at, you know, 20, 30 years from now.
And somebody mid-career, maybe later on in the career, if they elect this, they are not going to get the tax benefits, but it could spin off other negative tax issues. Their income would float. In other words, it could go higher. Mm-hmm. If it went into another bracket, there's this myth that if you go into another bracket, somehow all your other income is retaxed at the higher bracket, mm-hmm. which is 100% inaccurate. Mm-hmm. But it could go into a higher bracket. Some mm-hmm. things could be lost if somebody made a decent chunk of change and they had rental losses. It could limit that. So this should be looked at. We got a year at least to look at it, mm-hmm. and I shouldn't spend a lot of time looking at it now, but if people are on the edge, and we will do a lot more on this show on this, but probably not until the beginning part of next year when more is known.
Well, we are committed to doing it, and we are very actively working on the systems, the communications, and largely the payroll designs that need to change to make this happen. So people should know it's coming, and it's coming in the second quarter of 2012.
Do you know yet if it's going to be restricted to the same tax deferral, not tax deferral limit, but the same dollar limit that you can put into the traditional TSP?
Yes. The fact that we will have the a Roth and a traditional TSP availability doesn't change the total dollars that you can put in.
So if it's 16.5 again next year, it would be combined between your two accounts.
Correct. And so somebody could be potentially stay exactly as they are. Mm-hmm. Somebody could put all of their money into the Roth option, and somebody could split between the two.
So it's the employee's choice.
It will be the employee's choice, and that choice will not change how much money you can put in. It will change how those dollars are treated for tax purposes.
But my understanding is you won't be able to transfer money between the traditional and the Roth.
Yeah, and that the idea of doing a recharacterization is not mm-hmm. permitted.
Okay, which is what that would be called.
Great. So once you pull the trigger, it's pulled. You can't reload.
Yes, that you should be aware of that. This is not a two-way street that allows money to just change back and forth. You need to be careful and you need to think about the future.
So this would not be something open to retirees where they can move money, as you say, recharacterize it from mm-hmm. their existing account into the Roth.
Yeah, and you do want to be careful about what is available, what's not. That mm-hmm. is not something we anticipate right now.
Right, that's what I thought. Okay.
Okay, I got a question. Is the fee structure going to be the same with regards to both? So in other words, besides being a great investment, it's a great investment. One of the reasons is because of low fees. Mm-hmm. Would the same investment in a C fund in the traditional receive the same low fee in the Roth?
Yes. There'll be no change to our fee structure and the way it's calculated, the way it's applied. We have our operational fees. Then we net out what are called forfeitures. That's money that people forfeit from those who leave, feds who leave early. And then we assess those administrative charges onto the investments. So the money will be invested in the same place. The fees charged will be done the exact same way. There won't be a different level of fees for somebody who uses Roth as opposed to somebody who doesn't.
Okay, so will all the money be in one pot, or will they be in two pots, a traditional pot and a Roth pot?
Well, we will be tracking them separately. There will be different sources in our record-keeping system that we will track, so we'll know how much, just as we do today, we know how much money in my account has been put in by me out of my personal paycheck and how much the government, my employer, has put in for me. We track those two sources separately, and on an ongoing basis, we will track how much is pre-tax as opposed to how much is Roth money. But it's all invested in the same thing. The G, the S, the I, the funds, the L funds, they will all still be the investments. They won't change. The fees won't change. We'll have accounting systems to track those monies separately.
Okay.
I think that answers your question.
It sure does.
One other question I had was, for example, my son has a Roth IRA. You know, he just has it outside of his employer because we started that for him when he started working. Little did he know. But let's say he became a federal employee and he wanted to move his Roth IRA into the TSP Roth IRA or Roth 401k. Would that be something that would be allowed just as we can move in traditional IRAs into TSP, or is that something still being worked on or figured out?
The That is something we're working on right now, is exactly how the Roth monies will they transfer in.
Right.
We're still working on those.
Because I know we get a lot of transfers into the thrift from private, you know, IRAs, traditional IRAs, or rollover 401k plans. I thought it might be something people might be interested to do.
We do get a significant amount of money today, and that amount of money is growing substantially as to people that have money that's in an IRA or in a 401k or a 403b from different sources and move those monies into the TSP. Last month, they hit an all-time high of over $100 million.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. Which means that a lot of new feds recognize the value of the TSP, which we think is great.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's to simplify their life, or do you think it's for the low administrative expenses? Why do you
I think
get
it's
any
both,
feel?
Actually. Yeah. I think it's both. Mm-hmm. In that the having all of your money in a single place has some benefits simply for simplifying your life,
right,
as you said, Tammy.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you could choose to simplify your life and also save yourself some money, that's a winner.
That's even better,
yeah. So that's exactly what we're saying.
Right.
Okay, and I understand one difference with a Roth IRA and a Roth TSP. There is a mandatory distribution required at 70.5 for a traditional IRA.
Mm-hmm.
I understand a Roth 401k, not TSP, has a mandatory distribution at 70.5.
We want to be careful about the language we use here, but the Roth TSP and a Roth 401k operate virtually identical. But there are distinctions between a Roth IRA and a Roth TSP. So the Roth TSP program, which is identical in this respect to a Roth 401k, will have a requirement to take money to have withdrawals at age 70.5, to begin those withdrawals the year after the year in which you turn 70.5. Those requirements will not exist on a Roth IRA. So there potentially are some people that might say, do I want to move my Roth TSP money to a Roth IRA at some point in the future before they turn 70.5. And that is
to avoid that required distribution.
And that is a real possibility.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And maybe I just dug and hit the gas pipe here. I'll stop. All right. But I can't help myself.
Yeah. All righty.
So
it
gets really confusing. And we do this every day.
I'm sorry. So for those of you all listening, I'm not mixing the two together, as Greg so deftly said. There's a difference between the IRA, and there's a difference between the TSP, and there's a difference between a Roth IRA and a Roth TSP. And I will stop.
It gets confusing.
Okay, Tammy, I think I'm done until we get off of this.
Well, I know we want to kind of clarify some things about the Roth, only because even though it's still a year away, we are getting questions about it when we teach the seminars. I'm sure both Bob and I, and even the financial planners, get questions about, you know, is this a good idea? Should we do it? Who should do it? So I think we've clarified a lot of those things. Did you have any other questions on the Roth before we change gears?
I got one, and I'll go to the email bag only because it's the Roth. And he says, will I be able to borrow against a Roth TSP? We're not saying you should. We're not saying you shouldn't. The question is, can this person do it after it's introduced in the second calendar quarter of 2012?
It's one of the things we are working on, and our attention is to set up the Roth accounts so that it can be the source of funds for a loan. Yes.
Okay. And I think this ends the Roth. We thought we'd start the show off, and now let's open up the phone lines as well. So we're at 202-465-3080, 202-465-3080. We're at 10:19 Eastern Time, Monday, April 25th, and we will be off April 25th, Monday, at 10:58.5. So please don't call us after that. The show will be rebroadcast many times this week and some even next week, and it's archived on a website that we'll talk about later. So again, we're open mic now, 202-465-3080. The question should not be limited to the Roth TSP because we are about done.
You know, there is one thing I want to clarify just from one of Tammy's questions is, while we are working through some of these rollover and transfer capabilities, you had asked me about transferring, I think you had asked about a Roth IRA.
Mm-hmm.
And the IRS does not permit plan participants to move money from a Roth IRA to an employer-sponsored Roth account. So okay. That would be what we have.
So that would be different from someone who has a traditional IRA that's never been taxed and they want to move
exactly.
it to the TSP.
Exactly. And so okay. That's good to know. The point that, and we had this discussion internally just last week as we were preparing for the show is, and our internal tax attorney made clear to us that this is a one-way street that only goes the other way. So and I think that's a good way to look at it. And that's not a TSP rule. That comes from the IRS.
Right.
So I think the bottom line to this first 20 minutes is this is not heavy-duty stuff, but this is not to go into unadvised. And again, there'll be a lot more advice as we get more clarification. Mm-hmm. But today I thought it would just be good to because people said, really, they're coming on to talk about their... I said, we'll talk about it, but I don't think there's enough to carry the whole show and give the answers.
You know, and one of the challenges that we have right now is knowing that this is complicated. How do we structure the communication such that I and my team can help 4.5 million people make sense of it? And it's not easy. And so we're working through those communications right now so that we can build tools and educational materials to help people make tax decisions without having to be a tax lawyer.
Right.
Yeah. And we can help if you want. We see, about 20,000 people a year, and we do the show, and Tammy's article's read by more than 20,000, I believe. So we're happy to help as well. Anyway, for those of you that didn't catch the early part, we have Greg Long, the executive director. Can I just say TSP?
Yes.
All right. And Tom Trubucco. All right. And he's a director of external affairs, and Tammy Flanagan. I think everybody knows Tammy. So
we had a few questions that came in over the weekend on for today's show, because I think everybody was kind of excited to have a chance to ask questions of the TSP. And this one came up, and it's been kind of in the air, but I don't think anything's happened. But Bill wants to know, at one time there was a discussion that at retirement, the TSP would allow one to transfer their entire balance of annual leave into the thrift. Has that been implemented? And if so, can you provide any documentation?
Yes, Tammy. Unfortunately, it has not been implemented. And the reason it's not been implemented is that it has yet to be authorized by Congress. This is something that was recommended to us by the Employee Thrift Advisory Council, the employee organizations that represent federal and postal employees. When we took a look into it, we saw that this is something that the IRS does permit, and a number of 401k plans do offer that. So we got together with the Congress, explained the situation to them, and there were folks who were interested in taking this issue aboard and moving it along. And it got last year as far as a markup in the House Committee on Government Reform. The way the congressional process works, after you have a markup, a bill is scored. Actually, as part of the markup process, the bill is scored to find out what its effect on the federal budget is. The proposal that was scored would have allowed people to contribute from their terminal annual leave. This is the payment that feds get one time.
When we call it the lump sum payment of annual
service.
Leave.
Yes, that's right, the lump sum payment. Unfortunately, it generated a revenue loss to the federal treasury of $317 million, which is not a trifling amount.
Done deal.
That legislation was set aside at that point. We are talking again to the Hill, because one of the things we like to try to do is keep the TSP current with 401k plans. We walk like one. We talk like one. We want to continue to provide the benefits.
Offer the same benefits.
Good point, though. You walk and talk like one, but you ain't one, right?
That's so right. Technically, we are a 7701J plan, the only one in existence, as opposed to the 401k plan.
And I tell people that in class, and then they walk out.
That's right.
I said, what? Anyway, would the law in its original scoring allow the entirety of the accumulated leave, or just up to whatever the max was, or if somebody already had hit the max, they couldn't put any in?
That's right. It's up to the max, but there is a little twist in it, in that, as Tammy would know better than any, because she's the one who comes up with the magic date each year, there is a date on which it is most beneficial for federal and postal employees to retire. That date is always at the end of the year, and it allows you to carry forward certain things from this year into next year.
Right, so that lump sum leave payment would be paid in the following year.
That lump sum leave payment is paid the following year, so you can make your contribution from that against the limit in the following year.
After you've actually retired. Yeah, there was another question that came in. It says, when is the TSP going to open the annuity program up to competition?
It's we do compete. Currently, our vendor that we partner with is MetLife, and that will be competed again. We're actually working on drafting that and going through the motions that we have to go through to prepare for an open competition. That'll be done either at the end of this calendar year or likely into the beginning of 2012.
And that happens, what, every 5 years?
Usually every 5 years. Mm. Sometimes they go a little bit earlier, sometimes they get a little bit delayed, but usually every 5 years.
I guess one of the issues with competition is you got to find a company that can handle the volume of, what you just got done saying, 4.5 million participants.
Right.
So it can't be some small insurance company that couldn't handle that.
And as we look at that, one of the keys is, of course, financial viability. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure that we partner with a large and financially stable company, mm-hmm. Because the future annuity payments for the people who elect an annuity are based on the ability of that insurance company to pay. We also require that any insurance company that we partner with is licensed to do business in all 50 states along with the District of Columbia, because each of those states have different kind of backstop programs to ensure the stability of their structures. So, yes, when we get down to competing for that program, we will be setting up particular requirements that we have of any competitor, and I anticipate that our current vendor, along with several others, will be vying for that business. And we'll do what we always do, which is make a decision that delivers the best value for participants. And best value means that strength of mm-hmm. the company as well as pricing options and what we can do for the participants who elect the annuity.
Well, I think some people might be a little bit nervous now because the interest rates are low, but they're low if you bought it from MetLife through the thrift or if you bought it from somebody else in the private market, because just interest rates in general are pretty low right now. So this
yeah.
might not be the most popular time to buy an annuity.
And we recognize that the annuity is designed to provide a paycheck for life. And there are very clear benefits for people who do that because they never run out of money.
Security.
But we also know that annuity purchase rates are not particularly high, and it's because the interest rates drive down the benefit of the annuity.
Because I think what people need to know is once you purchase the annuity, that's for life.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't. The interest rate won't change over your lifetime, and you can't cash it out 20 years from now.
Exactly. Right. And
although we do offer a feature for increasing payments.
Right.
Again, you have to pay for that in mm-hmm. the calculation of your beginning amount.
Kind of like an inflation offset.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the 16 or so different variations available
on the annuity option
via the TSP annuity program.
Why on those annual statements do they use the annuity as the, the TSP provides the annual mm-hmm. participant statements and it gives you kind of a payout. Here's what you would receive every month based on the annuity election.
And we started doing this with our first annual statement, the first time ever, and it went out throughout the month of February to, again, 4.5 million people. And there's a new feature that's now on the back, and it's TSP lifetime income, mm-hmm. lifetime payment. And what we did there is we took the balance that's on the front page that everybody sees, how much money do I have in my TSP account, and we said, let's look at that balance and pretend that you were age 62 and at that point purchased a lifetime annuity, a single life annuity with that balance. Mm-hmm. And that was done because we want to help people change the mindset. There is so many people that are focused just on what's my balance.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to help people start thinking about that as the TSP is not a balance that you're going to go buy the Winnebago with. What it is, it's the source of your paycheck in retirement. And so this is designed to help them go from focusing on the balance to focusing on this is the source of my future paycheck.
How do we turn that into income?
And it was done with the knowledge that not everybody's going to be single. Not everybody is going to have retire at 62. And we know that using that age 62 single life annuity at today's annuity rates is an imperfect assumption. But it's better than not doing it at all.
It gives you some feel for the fact that this can become income.
Right. And that's really the point, is to begin the process of changing the mindset, to think about your TSP account as the source of your paycheck in retirement.
Actually, I like that because you are using a lower earning power to make that projection so mm-hmm. as the earning power goes up, if we have inflation, mm-hmm. then that number is going to change so people would get used to it. I tell this story way too often, but this happened over 10 years ago with an engineer. Engineers, good managing their money. This person was no different. I thought they'd put their money in the IRA from the thrift and said, nope, I'm going to buy the MetLife annuity. Now, I'm not a financial planner. This will prove why. I said, why would you do that? It only pays about 7.3% interest. Fortunately, the person's
locked
still alive
today,
and at least annually reminds me of the comment.
So. I'm still getting that check, and it's still computed at 7.3%.
So anyway, so that I like that you started doing this with a low number. It just hopefully the people can appreciate the fact that if it comes next year and we have an increase in inflation, they won't say, well, last year you told me it's this, but it points up the fact that this is not the first thing to do. And with more and more people not being CSRS, rather FERS, mm-hmm. this is a huge piece of their their retirement
total
income.
Retirement income.
And like you say, it's not a chunk of money to go buy the Winnebago or the bigger house. It's there to provide a cash flow.
Right. And the... I know that it's for somebody who's in their mid-40s, it's not just that the annuity rates are going to change, and they will. I don't know how they're going to go up or down, but I know they're going to change. It's also their contributions, the market value, and to the extent they're matched and their paycheck, everything is variable between now and the time that they retire. But this is a starting point for thinking about it.
That's good.
All right, now for those of you all that haven't, which no one has, give us a call, 202-465-3080. We've got Greg Long, Executive Director of the TSB, Tom Trabucco. Why can't I say that? Director of External Affairs, and Tammy Flanagan and Bob Lines, waiting for your calls.
Well, we did get some other emails, and here's one that came in. It said, the debt limit is soon approaching, and I was wondering how the government was given authority to borrow against our G fund. And has the fund been made whole from the 1995 debt ceiling borrowing? These are important questions, he says.
Absolutely. They are important questions. And perhaps I'll answer the second one first. Has there been a review to ensure that the TSB was made whole from the 95-96 debt limit hiatus? The answer is yes. The Government Accountability Office looked at it. It is reported in GAO Report AIMD. -96-130. I'm familiar with that number because put this GAO report up on our website whenever this issue comes up, and it comes up periodically. Mm-hmm. I understand it's since the debt limit notion was created in law back in 1917, there have been approximately 100 debt limit crises, 20 over the last 25 years. It so happened that one hit in 1987, just as the TSB was getting going. We only had one investment fund at that time. It was the G fund. And at that point, nobody wanted to have blood on their doorstep if the G fund could not be invested. And that's really what the problem is. Remember, the G fund doesn't contain money. It contains securities issued by the government of the United States. When we run up against the debt limit, the government can no longer issue those securities. So what Congress did, and they did it in a bill entitled the Thrift Savings Fund Investment Act of 1987, Public Law 100-43, it said, when you get to a time when the Treasury can no longer issue securities, the Secretary of the Treasury is authorized not to issue securities to the TSB. However, he is still required to go through all of the steps associated with making those investments. Thus, essentially, there is an outside-the-budget accounting of everything that's going on, along with a guarantee that everything will be made whole once the debt limit hiatus is over.
You've proven that many times.
We have proven that many times. That's correct. And this was... looked at, aside from the GAO, more recently by the Congressional Research Service, and they issued a report finding that the G fund is safe. And that's the message that I'd really like to get through to people who may be investing in the G fund and saying, I don't feel safe. I think I better put my money in the stock market because it's safer there. Well, stock market values fluctuate.
A little more volatile.
The G fund does not. The G fund does not have a bad day. So I would urge anyone in the G fund to understand that their G fund investment is 100% safe, guaranteed by the full faith and credit of the government of the United States of America.
I think we're living in a time when people just in general don't feel safe. We've got natural disasters. We have wars going on. We have economic problems. So I think there's some jittery nerves out there with those types of things.
Sure.
I mean, just driving here this morning, I saw a sign that said gasoline $4.49 a gallon. It's like, holy smokes.
Right. It can unnerve one. Mm-hmm. And especially something like this, which is complicated, and it follows on the potential government shutdown, which, again, you know, it did not affect the TSP because we don't receive appropriated funds. We put information up on our website to assure people that we would be open for business no matter what happened with that appropriation showdown. We remained open, and we'll be taking down the information on the last shutdown from our website, and we'll be putting up information on the potential debt limit hiatus, including both of those reports that I mentioned, the Congressional Research Service report and the GAO report.
Talking about that website. What a great website.
It is. I've finally gotten used to it. Because, you know, I'm somebody who gets stuck in old habits, so mm-hmm. I like the real simple Pong website, as you called it one time. But the new one, now I've figured out how to find the forms and find the calculators, and that's all I need.
Well, Tammy, it's funny you mention that, because one of the comments that I made to my board as we were contemplating, you know, investing the time and the money to improve the website, the comment I made was that, even if we get it all perfect, and we won't, but even if we do, there will still be some period and some people who will be unhappy. Mm-hmm. And it, simply because it's different, simply because
of course.
The old Pong error website, even though it had its limitations, it still had the information, and there were, at that point, you know, almost 4 million people that knew how to find stuff mm-hmm. with it. Now, everybody had to learn a different way. But it is faster. It is more logical, and it is more secure than it ever was before. And I think the feedback that we've gotten from participants, as well as from, you know, third party organizations mm-hmm. who have looked at it, has all been very positive.
And speaking of one who can't get beyond publications and forums, me, I love the hookup with a ballpark estimate. And with all the programs out there to do calculations, the ballpark estimate just does an outstanding job, but it is what it is. It's a mm-hmm. ballpark estimate. It's
And we link to that. It's the Employee Benefit Research Institute. It's a Washington-based think tank who is nonpartisan and, quite frankly, does outstanding work. And they provide the tools, and we were able to partner with OPM, who in turn partners with EBRI, to link to that site to give people a ballpark estimate of what you need.
It's very sobering. And I like the little chart at the end, you know, as long as you don't see red, and says if you stay on your path, you can mm-hmm. or can't, and it puts people, I think, on notice that today's dollar isn't going to carry them 20 years from now with the same dollar, and they have to save more, they have to make alternative mm-hmm. means to make ends meet.
Anyway. But I think it also can give some people some comfort level to know that if I'm a low-salaried employee who's going to actually proportionally get more from Social Security, then I don't need to save $1 million in the thrift. I can have a moderate savings account and still provide that supplemental income.
That's right. And you've hit the key fulcrum that was in place when the TSP and FERS was created, that by bringing new employees hired by the government under Social Security with its tilt toward lower-paid people, once you get into the business of assessing whether or not one is financially prepared for retirement based on a replacement ratio of your pre-retirement income, that Social Security benefit is better for lower paid people than it is for higher paid people as a part of your replacement.
Yeah, I always explain it as a seesaw. I'll say, you know, your Social Security, if it's down low because you're high salaried, then you need to really be focusing on your thrift. And I like to tell new employees, you know, who want to be hired as GS-13s, that you really need to save in the thrift, because you're not going to get much from, even if it doesn't change, you know, the way it is right now, you're not going to get much back.
Right.
But also to reassure someone who works at a moderate to low salary that it's not as important to save that huge amount, you know, still pay your bills and put
that's
your kids
right,
through
your,
school.
Current needs, yeah, that's right.
Right. So I think that's a little comforting to know that that's how it works.
How many people do you all meet that don't know that Social Security is taxable? I get these clients and they apply for it and they say, what do you mean I have to pay taxes on it at the federal level? Maybe not at the state, but definitely at the federal level. And they're just shocked. I got an email from a very smart person and why do I owe so much in taxes?
Well, it could be because their parents don't pay any tax on their Social Security if that's their only income.
Good point.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that we come across too many, but we do have a team of educators that goes out and visits with at different agencies and military facilities across the country. I'll take that question back to them and ask them.
Mm-hmm. That's good. And the other truth of the matter is, I've been doing this a while, but there was a third rail tax-wise with Social Security. You didn't pay taxes on it. So it's not recent, but it's not forever. And, of course, it's three levels of tax that would make one's hair hurt if I tried to explain it. And interesting, especially with FERS folks, I'm getting off on tax and financial planning a little bit. If they guard against taking too much out of an IRA, not the thrift, you can't just go in and grab a chunk and leave a chunk, it could cause their tax rate on Social Security to go up an awful lot just by taking a few dollars out.
Well, I got another question from Ohio. This came in over the weekend. It says, I would like to, and this is one that I think we'll have a little explanation to do, but it says, I would like to know what the advantage of a one-time full withdrawal of TSP to purchase CDs or to invest it somewhere or to put it in a Roth IRA. In other words, I guess she's saying, should I take it out and pay the tax on it to reinvest it as opposed to just taking a monthly check from the thrift? And she says, I'm going to be 70 and a half, so I got to do something. So should I take a one-time withdrawal, pay the tax all at once, or should I take the monthly payment? She's looking for some guidance.
We do have a book about that's focused on the issue of withdrawing money from your TSP account. And certainly we have the ability to withdraw your entire TSP account at once and pay the taxes, which for most people would put them in the highest tax bracket they would ever be in and pay the highest tax rate, which is normally something you very much want to avoid. I'm not giving tax advice, but it doesn't sound so like such a great idea to me.
I can. the present value of your money just got whacked.
Yeah.
You have a partner that just took a third or better of the money, never mind the state, maybe 35%, who knows what will happen to rates in 2 years. Tammy, oddly enough, I get the same question in class because I deal a little bit more on the tax side of things, and people say, I'm going to take X dollars out of my thrift and pay my mortgage off. And I go, you sure? And I go, well, I have to write the check, and da-da-da-da-da-da. And I said, yeah, but you have to write the check. Why not just take a monthly amount out of the TSP, do it electronically, take a little bit more out than what you need, and have the other thing, and you won't miss it. So you won't have the aggravation of writing the check.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, speaking of withdrawal options, I was just kind of wondering if you have any numbers of what do people do when they leave the government? Do they usually tend to leave it in the thrift? And do they elect the monthly payment option, the annuity option, transfer it out, cash it in? I think as much control as you have in saving in the thrift, you have just as much control of what you do with it when you take it out.
That's right. No, I think you're absolutely right on that. And we do have a large number of people who leave their funds on account. The last time I looked, that number was over 1 million. And let's see. No current. It's 1.1 million.
That is what?
Who are participants with no current contributions.
So these are separated participants.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Separated participants by and large. They may be taking monthly withdrawals, taking it out slowly. They may be doing nothing. Just letting it grow all the time.
So they've left their balances in the TSP.
Right. They've left their balances in there. And that's fine with us. We're happy to have them do it. And, along the lines of what your questioner from Ohio asked, the key question is, are you happy with what the TSP offers, everything else being equal? And if you are, if you like the investments, if you like the low cost, why would you leave?
Right, because you're not going to find the G fund anywhere else.
That's right. That's right. The G fund only exists in the TSP.
Which remains popular, doesn't it, the G fund?
It does, yes. Let's see, about 41% of our $283 billion is invested in the G fund.
Now that's actually come down. Has that been because of the L funds have grown?
Well, the L funds have grown.
I think people look at those as fairly safe. Not necessarily safe, but they look at those as making life simpler, where I don't have to figure out how much do I put in the CSI and F funds.
That's right.
The L funds have done exactly what we want them to do, which is create the asset allocations for participants based on the five underlying individual funds, and they have slowly gotten more and more popular. And we anticipated that we would now be up to 5% of the people that were in them, and we're well over that. We're actually well over 10% total allocation. So they've been tremendously popular.
So 10% of TSP participants put money in L funds?
Actually, more than that. It's about 14% of participants have some allocation to L funds. And we also know that not everybody's going to jump in with both feet, so they're not going to have all of their money in the life cycle funds. But there is some safety in being allocated properly. But still, there is risk in all of the L funds. Mm-hmm. With the G fund, as Tom said, never has a bad day. And right now, when things are volatile, sometimes that's the place to be for some people.
People feel more comfortable there.
If we go back to why people leave the money in the thrift, I think we're okay. But we have some people that say, well, I can't just go in. It's springtime now, and somebody might need money for a summer vacation, for a down payment on a cottage or a trip. We can't just go into the thrift if they're retired and grab it and leave the rest there. They can do it once.
Mm-hmm. Once.
So they might move some money over to an IRA for checking account purposes for issues. Then there's another way, and you all might get mad at me with this, but under the monthly payment option, you have two choices. One is fixed. And you're like kind of like a lifetime payment. And the other one is you're really telling the thrift how much you want. So you could set it at whatever bar you wanted. And then let's say something happened like a car or you needed repairs or monthly payment. You could jack the payment up for a couple of years and then bring it back down. Please don't get mad at me for that.
No.
But I mean, that's why it's there, right?
Right.
So it does have some flexibility, but it doesn't have the ability just to go in as you please, like you could with an IRA, with all due respects, and grab a chunk and leave a chunk. But so you move some of the money over and keep the rest where you feel very comfortable.
And that's exactly right. You know, you can have us figure out the monthly payments based upon your life expectancy and just the minimum, or you can just set up your monthly payment to be what you want it to be, which is going to be a little bit more than you think you need to live on. So you can put some of it, you know, in the bank account, growing a small reserve account for that car payment or that that unexpected event that might happen.
Truth of the matter is, I like that one.
Yeah. And you can change it every year.
I call
year.
It B.
Yep,
A
right.
and B. I call it.
Yeah. The changing it every year was recommended by the National Active and Retired Federal Employees. This was about 7 or 8 years ago. And they had a member who was talking about that, and he wanted that flexibility. So we took a look at it, and we put it in, and lo and behold, it has become our most popular withdrawal method in terms of the number of payments. We now issue 600,500 monthly payments each month. And on your point regarding the flexibility that it affords people, we're happy to have them change their amount. They can go as low as $25 if they want to, $25 a month. Or if they want to, take that trip to Europe that they've been, thinking about for a long time, up it to a larger amount for the next year. You get the 12 payments. Mm-hmm. They come out. You've collected your money, and then knock it back to 25 a month if you're not in the 70.5 required minimum distribution mode, mm-hmm. where we have to give you a certain amount of money each year.
I'm going to bang on your drum a little bit more. You mentioned a number like that to track, to move around, to do this and that, and you still have those fees as low as they are? Wow.
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do with volume. 4.5 million participants. I don't know of any employer-sponsored plan that's bigger than that. Is there one?
No.
It's the biggest.
There is no employer-sponsored defined contribution plan. We are by far the largest. So, and when I say defined contribution, for your listeners, what that in effect means is 401k.
Even Walmart doesn't employ more people than the government.
No, that was actually at a conference for plan sponsors last week, and the one of the my equivalent from Walmart was there, and he said, you know, I'm used to being the biggest employer in the room, but next to you, I'm small. And, you know, that's what we are. We are the largest employer in the world. And because of that, we are able to avail ourselves of economies of scale. But there is one other thing, and that is we have to balance something. As far as making our monthly payments, just change them at will, anytime. We've wrestled with this. Do we want to allow entire flexibility and knowing that the number of phone calls and the changes in forms that we'd have to process? And so we will have to look at this, and we will continue to look at it. But we will always say, okay, how do we maintain cost efficiency while still offering great service?
I think you'd have aggregation efficiency or inefficiency if you allowed it more often. Oh, I changed it. No, I want to change it back. And somebody has to think long about it because they have until a year after they made the decision to change it again. So they should do their homework, where they might not if they had the ability to change monthly.
Yeah, and that's those are the things we wrestle with every day.
Yeah.
So I think you have oversight that most 401k plans don't have. You're relying on Congress to make changes to the plan. You just can't decide what you want to do at a whim.
And there are some changes which we can do internally,
right.
But certainly there are, just
the
like
ones.
The ones Tom talked about. Sometimes we need our friends on Capitol Hill in the White House to agree. Right.
Are there anything in the midst of Congress that might be on the table this year for the thrift? Any proposals to change anything in the thrift or add anything? Or?
Actually, from what I've seen of all the proposals in Congress this year, they're all cuts. So we're happy not to be on the table right now.
They're focusing more on the defined benefit portion than on the contribution.
Correct. That's right. What the focus is on the federal sector right now, on the defined benefits portion. Again, since we walk and talk like a 401k, people are familiar with our benefits structure, and it seems to have become widely accepted on a bipartisan basis that this is a savings plan that's good for people to participate in, and that the benefit levels are just about right.
And with all due respects to the listeners, a defined benefit plan is money you put in and you receive a benefit from it. Now, in the case of the FERS or CSRS, you put money, you don't put it in, they take it from you, and you work a long time. And in reward for your investment, more so for your time on job.
Well, your benefits based on length of service and salary, not what you put in.
Yeah, and the other one is a defined contribution where you put in X dollars into something, usually in the form of a percentage.
Yeah,
like the thrift.
That's right. And I'd like to correct myself on something. I said we issued 600,000 monthly payments this year. My mistake. I looked too high up the list. We issued 1 million monthly payments in 2010.
What was the 600,000?
The 600,000 was the 2006 total.
Oh, okay. So that's how much it's increased in 5 years.
That's right. Exactly.
The 1 million plus monthly payments.
It's our first $1 million year on monthly payments.
And to give that some perspective, there's currently about 2 million retirees receiving OPM benefits. So that's about half the retirees or separated participants.
Remember, these are monthly payments.
Yeah.
So it goes out 12 times a year.
Oh, I gotcha.
Okay. So that number's exaggerated
because
when comparing it to the OPM number.
Got it.
Okay. Whatever it is, it's big.
It's big. It's big.
It's a popular option.
Yeah.
What I think is one of the most important numbers is what we talked about earlier, is that 1.1 million of primarily separated people who have elected to stay within the TSP. In general, those people could, if they wanted to, take their money tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And if they want to, we'll send them the check. But they choose to stay.
Right.
And I think for really good reasons. And that is we offer a very low cost, very efficient plan that makes a lot of sense. And more people want to aggregate their money in the TSP than want to take it out.
I know we're running short on time, but the one other thing that's new, kind of fully implemented, I think, right now is the spousal account. Can you just say a couple of words about what that is and what has changed?
The spousal account, what that does, and I like to use myself as an example, is if I have a TSP account, my wife is the beneficiary. If I got hit by a truck and died, which I prefer not to do for a long time, but if it happened, my wife would be the beneficiary of my account. Now, she would normally have to go through, previous to our change, she would have to go through a process by which she submitted a death certificate, and then we would, within 60 days after that, be required to cut her a check, and then she'd have to find a place where to put that money. typically she'd go to one of the big mutual funds or brokerage firms and have to pay a lot more in expenses. That's really a lousy thing to do, especially when she's hopefully grieving following my death. So what
for
this,
a long time.
Yeah, yes, yeah. What this does is it sets up an account automatically for my wife once we're notified that I'm dead. So she has a TSP account, and it allows her to not have to think about it for a while.
What if you had already started monthly payments? Would she get to continue the monthly payments?
Oh, there are different rules once we get into monthly payment, and I don't know them off the top of my head.
Right.
But we actually have a separate booklet that's now available on the website for participants in this particular spousal account category. But the general point I want to drive home is we've tried to figure out a way so that the spouse beneficiaries can take advantage of the TSP. It's low expenses and great service. At a time when they otherwise would be in a very difficult emotional period.
Now, it's not always the case, correct? Could leave it.
No, this is fairly new.
This is new. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we set this up on an interim basis about a year ago, and we formalized it and made it a systematic change in January.
How about a non-spouse?
Different story. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the old rules where you got to move
it. And Bob, I see you smiling. It's because you know that the spouse is treated the same from tax purposes.
Right.
And so there's no tax problem with doing this. There would be.
But a non-spouse wouldn't be taxed on it if they were the beneficiary. It could be transferred to a beneficiary's IRA and still be sheltered. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just covering all the bases.
Would that require someone to change their beneficiary if it already says 100% spouse? They would still have that option to keep it in the thrift.
And it's one of the reasons why what we did 2 years ago and a change to our statements is we started adding on each statement
the beneficiary,
the name of the beneficiaries. Because unfortunately, we have had some painful stories about people who married, then got divorced, and never changed their beneficiary, and ends up that a participant dies, and the beneficiary is their ex-spouse who they haven't talked to in 10 years. Mm-hmm. And that's not good.
All right, let's go around the table as we come for a landing. Tammy?
I'm going to leave it up to our guests today because I'm listening to every word they say. Anything you want to impart words of wisdom, Tom?
I think you've covered it all pretty well. I kind of feel exhausted here.
This is the only show that does not take a break.
I'll just leave with a couple of words. First of all, thank you. One of the things we've got to do is we've got to get our message out to our participants and beneficiaries and do so without any advertising budget whatsoever. And so you're a great way to do that. And thank you very much. And thank you to your listeners. And our job is to help 4.5 million people with the process of retiring with dignity. We take great pleasure in executing those duties. It's a joy to actually do, and I think I've got a great team here that gets that done.
Well, I think
you
do
must.
It well.
You must, and we love Penny too. Anyway, so thanks for coming. Now I can get some sleep because I stay up half the night worrying about this and studying. So until next time. Thanks for letting me sleep.
I'd say this is probably Bob and myself, I think, one of our favorite shows to do. We always look forward to you coming.
And next week,
Bob, Tammy, thanks.
Next week, we have the long-term care folks coming on,
that's
right?
Another very popular show. Yep. I look forward to that one as well.
I've been chastised for never knowing who next week's guest is by both Ann and Nancy, and I hope they're listening. Anyway, thanks, y'all. Tammy, see you next week. And again, thanks for coming. We really appreciate it as well as the listeners.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.
Cybersecurity runs deeper than information assurance. It includes mobile security, cyber innovations, forensics, collaboration. That's why last month the Defense Department increased its cyber